Have you tried finding tickets for any live event lately? It's impossible to keep up, and prices are crazy. That's why you have to check out Gold Star. Gold Star makes it easy to discover the best in live entertainment in your city with instant access to awesome events and special ticket deals, concerts, live theater, comedy, dance, food fests, immersive experiences, you name it. Gold Star has access to special deals you won't find anywhere else with savings of 50% or more. Go to goldstar.com and use the code DCPOD to save $10 on your first purchase. That's goldstar.com, code DCPOD to save $10.
Many of us are already planning our New Year's resolutions to work out more in 2023. But let's face it, they rarely stick. Well, Peloton's got a gift for you. Get up to $200 off accessories like non-slip grip dumbbells, cycling shoes, heart rate monitors, and more with the purchase of a Peloton bike, Bike Plus, or Tread. Don't wait. Get this offer before it ends on December 25th. Visit onepeloton.com. All access membership separate. Offer ends December 25th. Cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Are we all ready to experience the cultural phenomenon that is Black Scott Park? Yeah. Wow, this is also our first ever live show.
Yeah, it's a different feeling. It really is a different feeling considering we're usually in different rooms across the city staring at each other on the webcam.
Exactly.
And now we're staring at you beautiful people.
So I think I'll probably just start like right at the top about the podcast. So I'm Susie.
And I'm Shirley.
And we are Black Scott Pod. So like everybody, we decided on a fun little lockdown hobby. So I'll let you start first and just give a wee overview of like,
I moved to Scotland when I was about 7 years old. I'm originally from a small country that's landlocked inside South Africa called Lesotho. Mm-hmm. I usually tell people it's South Africa because once you have to start explaining the logistics of a country inside of a country, it gets a bit
sticky. I'm sure this crowd doesn't understand a country within a country.
No, it gets a bit sticky, but I moved here at the age of 7 and like it was a complete culture shock. It was wild. Like you go from being, you know, everyone that you see has the same face as you, the same presence, and then all of a sudden you're just in an all-white school and you're just there chilling and people are asking you if you got here in a banana boat. And then I met lovely Susie over here and our friendship has grown and we started up a podcast and that's pretty much the story of my life.
And just to jump on her, so I also came to Scotland when I was 10. Absolutely massive, huge culture shock. And my tiny little mind couldn't comprehend how 24 hours beforehand, I was like in a country and there's like loads of black people. And then literally overnight, get off at Heathrow and it's just a sea of white faces. And just for context, the most amount of white people that we would see back home would just be like on holiday. Like it would be British on holiday. That was my like a reference. So the second, you know, we like got off of that plane, we were like, okay, so you're really not in Kansas. Like you're literally in a whole different country. You're gonna have to like learn all kinds of different things. So I probably should say that, you know, even though I use the name Susie, I was originally born with Mathanasi. And when I came to Scotland, my mom asked me a question, which was, what do you wanna be called? Because nobody can pronounce your name. And this was, you know, registering for a primary school because nobody could sort of say Mathanasi. And I'm like, so she literally asked me, she was like, what do you want to be called? And my lovely 9-10 year old brain was like, well, I really like the Rugrats, so the one character I like really relate to is, I don't know if you know Susie Carmichael, but I loved her because I loved singing, I loved dancing. I didn't want to be Angelica because a bit too much. But I literally was like, yes, I'm going to be Susie. Yeah. And from that day on, I've kind of taken on Susie, and occasionally you can hear me be Mathanasi, but I think that was kind of a nice way of her of bringing me in to choose what I would be called, because in a way it would kind of sucks, you know, when people butcher your name quite a lot and not all of that. But yeah, so that's kind of me. And I came to this country and I met Shirley, and both of our parents were
nurses,
yeah. And they came over here.
Their friendship actually started before our friendship, but it was those two, and then we thought to ourselves, actually Susie used to babysit me. So for like a long time she was like, I don't want to babysit her, like, why do I have to go to her house?
Yeah, she's like 4 years younger than me. Why would I want to babysit someone 4 years younger than me? That's tough to do.
No, but like I got to the age of 16 randomly. Like, you know, like in African households, right? Like, our families make us do this thing when it's Christmas time, like they always buy presents for each other, but instead of them delivering it to themselves, they send you out because that's why you had a child. Not purely because you wanted to give birth to a lovely human being. No, you just needed someone to do your errands for you. Precisely. So I was running my errands for my mom, like on Christmas Eve, I think it was. And I show up at Susie's house and I'm like, here's the air fryer mom got for your mom. And then Susie's like, wait, how old are you now again? I'm like, 16. She's like, you can chill.
Yes.
Sit down.
Yes.
How's life?
Finally. Prior to that, like Shirley and I, although we lived in the same town, so actually maybe I'll give you some context. So Musselburgh has got about 30,000 odd people in it, and circa 2003 or two,
yeah,
Shirley's family, my family, and one other family were the extent of black people
in Musselburgh.
So I basically knew that person.
No, we all did, because like we were, because the other black family that stayed there, that was auntie too.
Mm-hmm.
She was,
yeah,
part of the rounds as well.
Yeah,
for that middle Christmas. But that just goes to show you like how small Musselburgh is, and not only that, like the community of us,
yeah,
the whole community of four, like three families, like I'm pretty sure they all worked in the same place as well.
Yeah, like
they all
literally
worked
in the same place. It's a
yeah,
super close-knit, small community, but you know, 30,000 people and you already know everybody that is like in your community,
no,
is a bit,
yeah,
wild. So we always kind of had to figure out how to grow up, because that's the other thing that a lot of people don't think about is when you are, you know, part of a small, super, super small minority, you know, what does high school look like? Or what does primary,
yeah,
school look like? Because, I don't know, how did you find...
I mean, I guess, like, that's the whole basis of the podcast starting up in the first place. It's sort of like a situation where, like, when people talk about, like, black British culture, you see London, you see Birmingham, you see Manchester, and you see all of these kids that got to grow up with other kids the same colour as them. They have, like, you know, proper communities. And then, like, in the meantime, we're up here with our communities, and bless them, obviously, like we did get the support that we can, but the whole concept of like growing up as like a little black girl and there's no role models, or like,
yeah,
there's no anyone around you that looks as you or like that understands you, and it's just,
yeah, I think the best we got was like I don't know if you used to watch Channel 4, like, is it June Sarpong?
Oh,
and
yeah,
she was like on that, so that was, you know, somebody that we looked at.
There was someone else, but I've completely forgotten.
But
I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, when I came here, primary 7 was a bit like, well, I was the only sort of black kids in school, so I kind of fielded a lot of questions about what it's like growing up back home, and a lot of misconceptions as well, because a lot of people sort of assume that when you come from a developing world, that, you know, you're coming from like absolute poverty, and like, you know, it's the Oxfam adverts,
yeah,
and that, and like absolutely had, you know, people stop and be like, oh, I've donated to Oxfam. I'm like, okay, good for you. But you know, that kind of stuff, that kind of vision, that because you're the African kid in school, that you kind of like have,
yeah,
a little pity, but it's kind of like, well, actually,
mm-hmm,
where I've come from is quite rich in,
yeah,
in culture.
A lot
and,
of things.
You know, we're not all sort of living in the little huts,
mm-hmm,
and stuff. I'm just trying to like educate people, like literally,
yeah,
from the get-go. But that's not to say that in Scotland, I discovered something that was like absolutely amazing. I think it was the first week of primary school. I don't know if I've told you this before.
Lord.
So basically, came to lunchtime and the kids were all super excited because they got to go out of the school gates when it was when you were in primary seven to go for lunch. So, you know, everybody's like going, oh, we're gonna go to the chippy, we're all gonna go to the chippy. And I'm like, what's a chippy? what is it? I'm used to, you know, njima, which is like this staple food back home, which is like, it's very stodgy and it's absolutely not kid friendly, like to take into school because you have to wash your hands and do like this, that, and you have to eat it with your hands, that kind of stuff. So I was like, pretty much I've got, I can just go across the road and get some njima. But, you know, at first I was like, oh, okay, what's a chippy?
Yeah.
And they were like, it's fish and chips. And I'm like, right.
Okay. Bearing in mind as well, we were landlocked. Like, our countries are both landlocked. They know sea.
Yeah.
Like, you see a fish like once in a couple months.
River.
Right. That's Christmas. It's a fish. Getting fish for Christmas.
Yeah.
No, but you know the thing is, like, see, kids back in them days were like very inventive.
Yeah.
Like, I have to give it to them. Like, you can stay mad only for a little bit, but you actually have to give it to them. Like, some of the names were just. You actually do have to give it to them because, like, I think to myself at that age, would I have been able to think of something like that? Probably not. So I got braids. Susie got braids initially.
Yes.
The most famous one for every single time we got braids was Medusa. That was great. I was like, how did you manage to...
Yeah, really came out like, with Medusa, wow.
No, because your literature skills have to be really fantastic.
Yes. Like, you have to know Greek mythology, first of all.
Like,
right. Figure
at
that
the
out.
Age of 10 and you're out here doing Greek mythology, like...
Yeah.
That's education.
Okay, right.
You know?
That's fine.
No, but like, I think that's just like some of the beautiful things about like Scotland.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's nothing more special and wonderful about Scotland than just the way we can turn absolutely anything into an insult.
Yeah.
Like anything.
Well, actually, I was thinking about this the other day, but I kind of feel like the way that kids these days talk to each other has like completely changed to the way that we all used to sort of do it back then. And you obviously get like, well, this is why I'm glad in a way that we grew up when we grew up, because I think it would have been a lot more difficult for us with things like, you know, TikTok, Instagram and Twitter and the sort of the rise of like cyberbullying and stuff, because back in the day when we got the sort of bullying comments, it was stuff that was, you know, said to your face because there was no other way that you were gonna hear it. So people literally had to, so people literally had to have whatever it was that they had in their head and like come find you and tell it to your face, basically. And sort of now you can sort of have it all like 24/7.
Write it on your notes on your iPhone and tell yourself this is the insult I'm gonna throw down later.
That's right. And like basically it's just I feel kind of grateful in a way. I don't know, like, I feel grateful that I didn't experience.
Imagine you had time to think of comebacks. That's the
way
I always
think of comebacks.
Yeah, you have to. You can even Google them at this rate. I think that's why kids why the bullying is like they Google them.
Yeah.
And it goes a bit left.
Yeah.
But no, it's a mad world out there. It really, really is. And if you think about it, like when we were growing up, so Susie and I both grew up, obviously back home. She moved when she was 10 and I was 7. And one of the things that we often talk about sometimes, it's the reality of the dog situation in comparison back home. Here, you'll be walking down the street and someone's walking with the biggest dog you've ever seen in your life. Oh, tell you what, she's friendly.
Is she?
The same size as me. Talk about friendly. Back home, you see a dog half your size, you're like, you're crossing the roads, you're going over to the next neighborhood because that dog will get there faster than you can.
Yeah.
I ain't doing that. I ain't being chased by no dog, not in the UK, but I'm not by a dog.
Literally, that's probably one of the biggest like culture shocks that I kind of got when I got here is like the dogs. I mean, they're like, you know what, it's taken 20 years, but yes, they're super cute, like absolutely adorable, little cute little things. But the thing is, back home, like you say, dogs are not kept for like being pets, like they're kept to guard. So when I came here and, you know, you go over to your friend's house for the first time and they didn't tell you that there's a dog, basically you've got no other... Yeah, you just
there's
have
no
to
way.
Like run.
And like nobody seems to understand like when that sheer panic is actually erupting like from deep down inside you, like you are so scared. Oh no, it's fine, You just go sit in another room. He'll just lick your hand.
No, he wants a taste.
He wants to eat me.
I'm pretty sure everyone in this room probably has a dog chase story. Am I right?
Everyone has
or
a dog chase
I?
Story.
We all have like some.
You don't have a dog,
you
chase,
don't
story.
Have a dog chase story. You do. Yes.
That is a
See,
beautiful life, I'll give you.
I'm just going to use you as an example, but like, yes, absolutely. See, everybody does have a dog chase story, so we're absolutely justified in our response
then
to dogs.
Scary times. Like, it's just something that you'll never get used to. And I'm looking back
what
now
else
at
did
it.
You, what took you ages to get used to?
Almost everything. I would say the accent. Which is quite funny now that you say the accent, because when you
now.
Speak, people are like, oh my god, you're Scottish. I'm like, can you tell? And then when you're in Scotland, people are like, where are you from? You've got like a really interesting accent. Scotland, pretty much. But I think the accent, definitely. My favourite thing to say was rindarindaboot.
What?
Rindarindaboot.
What?
I loved it. Like for a good 2 years, every time I went home, I was like, rindarindaboot. Uh-huh. People are like, what does that mean? I'm like, it's Scottish.
Oh my gosh.
But I think, yeah. Did you not have any issues with the language barrier or not?
I just thought everybody talked too fast.
Yeah.
And then now I talk too fast for people, so that's just as well, and that's just fine.
It goes full circle, innit?
Yeah, it really does. Like, absolutely. But actually, something momentous happened this week for myself. I have to steal the spotlight.
No, you have
to
do it.
And I'm so excited about this. But after about 20 odd years, I finally got my British citizenship and I got it all through. And I am so excited. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yay!
You're
one of us, man. And it's such a long process. And after going through last like 14 months of waiting for things to, you know, come through, you know, going through, you know, rigorous immigration interviews and all of that, and just kind of feeling like, oh my god, like this is the most draining process. I can totally see why people, you know, would just be like, I'd rather do anything
it's
else
a lot.
Than fill out an immigration form. But anyways, yes, so I finally went and I got my citizenship, had the ceremony, got handed this wonderful envelope, and I was like, I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna savor this. I'm not gonna open this right now in the car. I'm gonna, you know, open it when I get home. And I get home and I open it, and it's freaking Priti Patel's face. Like, literally, the first page is Priti Patel. Like, I literally felt.
Welcome to the UK.
Yeah. To feel right now.
Wonderful.
And also,
wonderful.
Did we need the photo before the welcome text?
It's worth it.
Yeah, she had that smirk. I can definitely verify she had the smirk on. But yeah, so I am officially a British citizen, which is great, and it's wonderful, and hopefully makes things a lot easier in life, because traveling sometimes with an African passport is one of the most stressful.
Do you know how much they respect you when you're carrying a red passport in airports? Like, they may as well.
Blue.
Oh, is it blue now? Oh, it is blue now.
It's blue now. Oh,
things are changing,
now,
aren't they? No, but like, the level of respect is actually embarrassing. Like, I'm genuinely like, guys, like, come on, like, you don't need to do this. I remember, like, cause pretty much ever since I moved here, I've been like traveling with my mom and dad, like, through. That way, so they'll always do it. I never really sussed it, I never clocked it. Up until like a couple years ago when I decided to travel on my Southern African passport because I'd lost my passport, pretty much. So I guess I didn't really realize like how respected you were, like once you get into that specific like UK
so
passports lane and other passports lane. Like, this lady basically pushed me. She was like, you need to move. I was like, oh, yo, I'm moving, ma'am. Like, it's okay. And like next minute, you know, it's like, you're not moving quick enough. Dude, like, we literally just got off a flight. Like, everybody here is moving at the same pace as these people in front of us. Like, is it that deep?
Yeah.
I ain't never seen that behavior on the other side of the line before.
Oh, well, we're all gonna find out now in this brand new world.
With our
that
blue
we're all going
blue.
Into it. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it like a navy or like
a what?
Like the blue, is it like a navy or like sky blue? Or?
Girl, I literally had to send off for everything, so I'm gonna find out in 10 weeks. So
nice.
I'm so excited for
nice.
That. But yeah, how did you find sort of Well, the thing about Shirley is that she's always been like really outgoing, like more outgoing than me. So for the longest time ever, you were my reference point for like all things like black and that stuff that's going on in Edinburgh, because I don't know if you've all been walking around this festival, but I'm pretty sure, I feel really confident in sort of saying, I don't think you've seen many black people.
I've seen two lovely ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, three lovely ladies. You're a third lovely lady.
Hey.
Lovely lady. Like, honestly, I
behind the pole.
But it's the whole whole thing is
Because you were my reference point for a lot of it, because I found it obviously quite difficult to sort of make friends out there, because Musselburgh can be like, well, small towns,
very
you know
close.
How small towns are
very
when
close.
You're in your own community, and that community is so difficult to like come out of it.
Yeah.
But how did you find it? Because you were kind of almost always quite well connected.
Yeah.
That. So how
well,
you...
the thing is that like, that was actually all through my mum and through like youth groups. I have to actually physically go to like a youth group that supported black and ethnic minority ladies across Edinburgh and Glasgow, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time when I went, it was just Edinburgh. So it was generally just like a meetup every two Tuesdays, and you meet all of these people and you're like, damn, like, okay, so there actually is more than one black family in this entire city.
Yeah.
We can work with that. And I think after that, dare I say, this is so bad. Like, yeah, guys, make friends. No, I made black friends by going clubbing.
I did that.
So once I realized that there is a whole other side of clubbing, because when I started clubbing, I was going to places like Cav. I don't know if any of you guys know what Cav is like, but yeah, it's a lot. Like, it's really, really a lot. There's like different types of room. There was an R&B room that I went to for the longest time, but it had carpet on it. So you're in a nightclub and there's carpet on the floor. So it was a lot. But once I kind of realized that, like, you know, there's like a whole black scene and stuff, that really opened so many doors to absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you and I then eventually started clubbing together.
Yeah. I think so, because I think
also
my main spot up to that point was basically the Hive.
Hive till five.
£1 shots, sticky walls and floors. Yes. So good. You go out with £20, come back with £15, still somehow drunk.
You did. I remember you though, actually. Huh? Like, you actually used to be able to go out with a tenner in your account and you're fine.
Now,
like,
you can't even get the bus ticket for like...
What?
Oh my gosh.
You're paying entry with that tenner and you're going to be there fumbling your fingers like, yeah. What are we doing now? It's not looking good. It is not looking good.
Yeah, but so I think like round about that clubbing time is probably when I started like getting a bit more like friendships with like close people from different communities. And it just kind of shows like sometimes you have to come out of
your shell,
comfort zone. And definitely out of my shell to like meet different people, for sure,
I feel that.
But something that I always sort of keep coming back to, that I always kind of feel like I have to share, is how when we were in high school, I don't really know how to make this confession, because
one
I think it would be very, very like visible.
Which one?
But if you remember Dream Matte Mousse, I'm sure a couple of us went through the Dream Matte Mousse phase. Well,
foundation lips.
Not just that, it was the fact that Dream Matte Mousse, Maybelline, L'Oreal, wherever, that they had one shade for all black women, and they used Beyoncé as the shade.
Beautiful pen.
So literally, me and Shirley with our one pot.
And Dream Matte Mousse was actually the breakthrough, because if you remember, the darkest color that they used to have in Superdrug was sand.
Oh yeah.
Sand. Yeah. That's like with like the deepest ash that you can get from sand as well. It was really an experience. So when Dream Matte Mousse came out in that one colour,
we were falling all over ourselves. Like, don't get it wrong, we were falling over ourselves. Because finally, yes. See y'all with your foundation lips. You'll see me, I'm gonna have foundation lips too. Yeah, exactly. Come and do it as well. I'm gonna get on board this fashion trend that I can participate in. But yeah, literally the fact that you and I shared a singular shade of foundation between us is like ridiculous, and it's so crazy now to think about how we made.
Do you know what I mean? How we used to do our makeup.
Oh my god.
I always think about this, and sometimes when I tell people, people are like, "You did not do that." No, I did that. I did that. So that sand foundation I was talking about earlier, I bought that and I used it because I was like, "There's no way you're gonna break me." No, you're not gonna do it. I will put makeup on my face and I will look nice. So I used to cake that, like literally all over my face. You're looking like Casper doesn't want to look like Casper. It was not looking good.
It was looking like reverse.
But then I'd take like bronzer. This bronzer as well is like tailored to white people, not black people either. I was like, yeah, that's
you
not
still, you still use that bronzer. Don't lie.
Do you still use
don't
that?
Lie.
It's a good bronzer. It's a good bronzer. It smells like chocolate too. It's a good bronzer. I can't believe it.
But you know what? You actually reminded me some of the most mental, mental names of the foundation. I mean, we've gotten a lot better now. But so my shade, once inclusivity had started, the deepest shade, me, apparently, was called Mud.
Remember that?
It was called
Mud. Remember that? Yeah, lovely. Yeah,
and then everybody got caramel and porcelain. Mud. How am I supposed to feel?
Mud.
Mud.
No, I do feel that. No, they let us down. They actually, the makeup industry let us down. So, cause
we now have espresso. Yeah, it's called espresso now.
No, you've got different shades of coffee.
Yeah.
Americano. You've just got plain coffee. Different shades. Got milky coffee.
Yeah.
Damn. Like, there are really nice out there. I'm just
glad that they're not saying we're like mud and dirt and whatever. I'm glad that we've moved that dial along. Thankfully.
Yeah. And like people are making makeup for people that need makeup, which is all of us. No, but like those struggles there were actually deep. Those struggles were like so deep. I'm very, very similar to the makeup situation was the whole hair situation. Like I know I mentioned earlier that people used to say like obviously like had nicknames and stuff, but see the actual journey of hair not being somewhere where there's a lot of people that do your hair.
So there was literally one hairdresser that we had, and she's still around, and she is an OG, and we love her so much. And she has a shop in Great Junction Street. It's called Culture Lounge. But this woman basically serviced the whole black community in Edinburgh for hair because it is so difficult. Well, at the time, it was difficult to get braid packs. And now like wigs and all that kind of stuff, you know, you really had to go order it online, or trek to Glasgow, or trek to like London, or just somewhere with like a bigger population of black people. But Colleen was like absolutely amazing, and she like helped so many of us to do our hair.
No, she really, really did. But you know what the problem is? See, in the meantime of you getting your hair, see the wee breaks, you've got your protective hairstyle time, and then you've got your breaks when you're just leaving your hair naturally out. Now I wanted to go a step far, like, I wanted to go a step further. I was like, you know what, bring them straighteners around. So as you can imagine, every single morning before school, the smell of like charred oil in the air, Shirley's got a fringe that goes that way, but like, the hair texture doesn't really, like, honestly, this fringe was sitting like this. It was like a cap. And I thought I was doing the most. I thought I was like, yeah, you're doing it. I used to spike up my hair at the ends as well, put a wee bandana on. And I really used to think, I'm doing this. Now you look back at the pictures, you're like,
yeah.
Why did nobody stop me? I have no real friends.
Yeah, they just let you go outside.
That's actually got me thinking, I need to jump on Facebook and list, guys, what were you thinking of letting me leave the house like that? Like, what were you doing? Why are we trying to get fringes?
Of your emo phase,
let's
though?
Know. We went through emo stages. Yeah. We went through emo
Which
stages.
Which is really difficult as
I
well,
was
actually.
Seen, you know, that's like emo of color.
Did you have the tutu?
I did have the tutu and the leg warmers.
The gloves.
And the, do you remember the hoodies with the stars?
Please, no.
Yeah, and like the combats.
The spiky studded belt.
Yeah.
Like that.
And like those, like the finger warmer gloves. That was...
But completely ruined by the fact that you couldn't slick your hair. Like, you couldn't do
the
swoop.
That's what I mean. Like, I wanted to do the, you know, the flick. But, like, my hair's too static. So every time I flicked, the fringe would just stand. Like, hi. It was a lot. It was really, really a lot. But, like, low-key, those were some great times.
Yeah.
Like,
it was. I literally ventured into, like, the, you know, the eyeliner, the... You're just dramatic. Before Julia
you
Fox.
You cut your hair. Your mother let you cut your hair.
Well, not just that. In college, for some reason, I was like, right, yeah. I'm going to take advantage of the fact that my hair can just sort of spike up and stand up by itself without having to put any gel or like whatever it is.
You didn't.
I shaved one side of my hair off. I don't know what I was thinking. And then I saw how horrific it looked after the first day of college. I literally turned up and everyone was like, literally was like, oh, I should just shave the other side off. So I went and I shaved the other side off and I came back and still the same list. I just said, oh, fuck
no,
it,
but
I'm
you
want
that
more
of a trust. Nah, you want to have a chest.
But that's the thing though, because if I had to kind of have like somebody to just be like,
this
take
is how
a
it
second,
is.
Take a second before you shave your hair off to
think
about
it.
Just you're going to shave your hair off. So yeah, I wish somebody had stopped me because
nah,
that was
I actually envied you though. I legitimately envied the fact that you were able to just do you know what, like allow it because. Like, your hair is just such a big part of yourself. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, up until I got to this age to be confident enough to be like, you know what, let me just take it off because I'm too stressed. For me, my hair was
so
everything.
Good with a bald head,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's the big forehead that's the issue. But, like, you know, we leave that. We talk about it another day. Southern Africans, that's the blood I was given in it. But, no, like, it was just such a big part of my identity. And I was like, nah, like, why on earth would you shave your hair off by choice? Like, it takes us years to even get to shoulder length, sis, by
mm-hmm.
choice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's a rock star.
Yes.
I'm doing it, doing the most. Is... No, but I will give it to you because I could have never ever did that.
No.
Look at me
I'll
now.
I'll never
though.
Do it again, though.
Liar.
No, I'll never
but, like,
do
it's
it.
So nice. It's such a refreshing feeling.
Yes.
Do you know when you don't have to wake up and like cornrow your hair or put a wig on? Or like when you don't have braids, you can just chill.
So I actually have got a thing. Okay, right. So just while we are all here and we are all gathered, I think this is now a time to do a very, very important sort of PSA. If you're speaking to a black woman and you think it may be a wig, or you're not sure, but you want to clarify, don't.
Where'd you know it from, sis?
Yeah, just, let's just avoid that.
Yeah.
Because I know you're looking at my hairline. Just so we know. We know that you're looking in that specific spot.
No, do you know what I hate? I hate this, and I don't know if you've ever gotten this, yeah? But like my edges are evidently not blended. Like you can literally see
girl,
the front
is
afro.
Just giving you all this for free.
I am. You can see the front is afro and the rest is wig. And someone comes like, is that your real hair? Yeah, it is. The two different textures and colors,
yeah.
All of it.
I call it a superpower.
All
actually.
Together. Yeah, it's basic. It's mixed hair.
No,
you
it's
get
definitely
it.
A superpower because I used to get such a power trip back in school when I would like. Go away, it's Friday, whatever. You saw me with short hair on Friday. Monday, I've got the long hair. And everyone was like, oh my God, how, like, is that your real hair? Did, oh my gosh, that's so quick. And I was literally like, yeah.
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 Yeah, it's my hair.
You're gonna fall off in public.
Huh?
You're gonna fall off in public.
Almost.
So no definites.
No.
Nah, guys, my wig's fallen off in public a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like, I would say with pride and chest because those were very, very hard days. This happened in a nightclub. Yeah, in a nightclub, bang on the dance floor, like right in the middle. I bumped into like an old high school friend. And at this time, like, there was no such thing as like gluing and securing and like all of that mishmash mosh. You just stick the wig on top of your head and you call it a day and you leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I bump into a friend and he hugs me. So obviously his hug must have like latched onto the back of my wig. We're in this middle of this beautiful embrace at the moment. All of a sudden, like, I just feel naked. Like, there's a breeze somewhere where there's not meant to be a breeze. I'm like, my wig's on the floor. The whole damn thing's on the floor, like literally looking like a dead rat on the floor. It's just there. I ain't never picked up a wig so fast and ran to the bathroom. I had to sit down and basically give myself a pep talk and be like, dude, like, you can either leave now, call it a day, you know, you've been defeated, or you can go out there and down 5 tequila shots and call it like it's literally 2 o'clock. There's a whole hour to do this. I chose option two because why not?
And this
why
was the time when club photographers were rampant.
Oh, it's a thing. There's somewhere out there, there is a photograph of my wig on the floor, and then whoever has it, like if you could come forward and just give it to me because it's a beautiful memory. No, but I will say that my friends actually had my back that day because the way they all scattered to put that wig back onto my head, five girls, one wig, one head. Beautiful. It was a beautiful unity. That's what it was. It was unity.
Yeah.
You know?
Sisterhood came
That's
together.
What they mean by black power.
No, traveling pants.
That's, I mean, they did
traveling
put it on backwards.
Like...
But, you know, we done something about that situation. Yeah. Now we've advanced in the
yeah.
world of hair. We really have.
Yeah.
We have made
That's
it.
That's why you absolutely should not mention it. Thank you. That
don't.
Is a PSA for today.
Miles and Lee.
I think that probably is also us. Ends on a weird note, that's fine. That's our podcast, basically. Love to leave you all with some wonderful tidbits and things to take away for the weekend.
You know?
I guess if you take anything away from our podcast today is hopefully, you know, just to listen to more different types of voices, people you normally wouldn't, you know, if you're wondering about someone's experience, you know, podcasts are fantastic because people are happy to talk and talk for days. So, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have a re-listen to our podcast, which you can find it pretty much
anywhere.
Like
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Well, good night, all of us.
Right.
Have you tried finding tickets for any live event lately? It's impossible to keep up, and prices are crazy. That's why you have to check out Gold Star. Gold Star makes it easy to discover the best in live entertainment in your city with instant access to awesome events and special ticket deals, concerts, live theater, comedy, dance, food fests, immersive experiences, you name it. Gold Star has access to special deals you won't find anywhere else with savings of 50% or more. Go to goldstar.com and use the code DCPOD to save $10 on your first purchase. That's goldstar.com, code DCPOD to save $10.